Blog Talk Radio.
Complications from getting into you from Skype, then here I am whining, you know. It's just amazing. Welcome to Masonic Effects with all the stumbling. Think of it like we're just little pebbles on the bottom of the brook bouncing along in the current. That's the way it's meant to be. Welcome and good morning here on the 19th of June 2000. This is the 2016. This is The solstice is just a couple of days away, isn't it? Yeah, it's the 171st day of the year. That only leaves us 195 left. It's amazing. We have tomorrow. I expect that all of the pull on your genetic druidness will have you out noticing the moon and the last night bathing the world, this part of the world, in that opalescent glow. It's like everything is just glowing a little bit in the dark. Tremendous. We have a really good program today. I have to say that last week we had enormous technical complications again. This is fairly routine little process, as you can imagine. We push buttons, things happen automatically, except when they don't. And then there's the mad scatter for suggestion panic, how to get online and address the audience. Well, you know, the best laid plans. It's I want to speak with you a bit about the progress, what paused the progress of Freemasonry. And oh my goodness, yes, I'm that heretical frame of mind here to think that Freemasonry is, I'm trying to understand the nature of Freemasonry. And I think it is a progressive art and science. And so to get us into that progressive frame of mind, we're going to have a little music by John Coltrane a little later called Equinox. Of course, who could not, hey? He didn't have anything with solstice in it, so Equinox, well, you know. Here's something from Sade. I think she's a Somalian woman, singer, gorgeous voice. This is from Kiss of Life. Ah, get us all started.
Look at the sky.
Music always seems to help us become centered. And it's particularly relevant today because I want to talk to you about how ritual, attending and participating in ritual, helps us rebalance as Freemasons. First, the narrative. Today, the commentaries on belief and superstition, and really addressing a question, what paused the progress of Freemasonry. It doesn't stop. Paused. This is the illusion. Pausing is an illusion. It is captured in a sense of loss. We cannot modernize lest we leave some part of our heritage and ourselves behind. As we profess to be the gentle craft, let's not be harsh or smug in our observations as we go along this conversation. There is no honor in hubris. We profess to be humble servants, and now our craft requires us to look deeply into the mirror and see what we have become or are becoming. The dawn of civilization was a time when the forces of nature and whims of God held us in a tight grasp. 2,500 years ago, the experience of civilization began to change forever. It was a time when rationality overrode superstition and belief. We became responsible for our own destiny. Three key thinkers from the ancient world put us on a path of understanding natural forces, seeing for the first time a geometry of the world outside and consciousness within the mind. Is good stronger than evil? How do I live a good life? What is a just society? What is my destiny? Who am I? We owe so much to them, as any free-thinking Masons will acknowledge. I'm talking here about Socrates and Confucius and Buddha. It is not the place to speak about their specific contributions to thought. Their ideas were all the more remarkable because they came out of utter darkness. They were radical, and their ideas were not necessarily well-received or popular at the time. A time before civilized men used reason to answer the imponderable questions of existence. Today, Masonic effects will attempt to illustrate the basis of a few startling observations. Try as we might, we experience Freemasonry as a thriving source of restrained energy, full of potential to bring light to the darkness. Centuries of brethren have left us bereft of the study of ideas that were from perhaps that first period of enlightenment. Freemasonry is far more than mortar and stone. It is essential ideas that shape character and inspire. It is a reservoir of knowledge. And yet, it remains largely untapped. Think, then, that this notion of Freemasonry is of a universe, a vast, endless universe. And we are on a journey through that. Each of us a tiny dot, a dot of light in the night sky. Each moving in his own, her own trajectory. And along that path, we are benefiting from the work of great minds that challenged the irrationality. Now, let me just stumble forward for a moment here and ask a simple question. Does this explain, does the need for rationality explain the predicament, the circumstance of Freemasonry today? And I think in some ways it does. We have, we need to embrace ideas that were helpful in the development not only of civilization, but in the sense, that simply means the abstraction of civilization doesn't exist, but men and women, people, do exist. And the ideas that we're talking about that we benefit largely, that benefit us all, were ideas that helped to build character. The essentials of the essential of Freemasonry is empathy. It's not about the conceit of being brighter or being well-read. It is about or being more the best of anything. It is about achieving balance, about not inconveniencing anyone. These are about reaching out to help our fellow man. These are the ideas that have been passed down to us that we know answer some of those questions. How do I live a good life? Well, de Montaigne helped us with that in what, 15th century, 14th century, France? He helped us answer some of the imponderables, if you will. We have a task in front of us as Freemasons in terms of duty. I think that there is an element of ancestor worship in Freemasonry. And I think it's important for us to periodically acknowledge our ancestry through the works. Now, what scraps of information are known are not necessarily profound revelations. They are more descriptive of the journey, what these people were doing at a given point in our history, the history of civilization and the history of Freemasonry. All the more remarkable when we think that they didn't have all of the tools and advantages that you and I enjoy today. When reason didn't exist, we were ruled by superstition. It seems odd, and you tell me here, gentlemen, am I mistaken that we are, some of our own difficulties are not in terms of challenge to a particular philosophy of life. They're almost happenstance, circumstantial complications, things that will come and go. I think, in a way, our sense, that struggle that we have, we cannot modernize, at least we leave some part of our heritage and ourselves behind. Immediately, and for the anxious in the room, they would jump all over this. Oh my goodness, what are we talking about? Modernizing? Are we modernizing Roman history? Well, I guess in a sense, every time are we modernizing Greek history or an understanding of the Hindi or the Buddha? In a sense, if we upgrade it with a new perspective, in that regard, a valid perspective that fits within the framework of natural forces. So what we discovered was, I think, and what we have an example of it today, is that we have this superstition. There is no fact to support the notion that we cannot modernize. And I use that provocatively. We cannot modernize, at least we leave some part of our heritage and ourselves behind. Think about it just a bit. How can we leave any part of our heritage and ourselves? How can we divorce ourselves from those aspects of our very being? I say to you that we can lose track, but I think we've already done that. We need to, I think, enhance our understanding of the power of ritual. We are of an ancient civilization in that way. It is not to make ritual a daily event, because I think the Greeks did that. And I think it's very devout amongst us do that. But in the hurly-burly of the world around us, that would require a meeting of the minds. And I don't know if we have that. The suggestion or hint is that we've had barrier out there. But I've never heard anybody say it out loud, that we've never done it before this way. I've never heard anybody say that, other than with that sense of boyish surprise. We never did that. You know, I've never fished off to that end of the dock before. I never handled my canoe paddle that way. I never, you know, used that part of Tai Chi to defend myself. That's a sense of discovery and newness. It's not to suggest, when we complicate it, we are suggesting that because we haven't done something before, somehow there's a wrongness or a reticence in that. Where that seems, in its simplest form, to defy a logic. When you think about it, it's one of the philosophical problems. And I think we need to understand it. It's not something that that compels us to stop moving forward, because nothing does that. It's really, if we begin to believe that a thought governs us, we need to be able to understand, are there natural forces behind that, and what are they? Well, if I'm thinking about this notion of our sense of modernity, that seems to be the antithesis of Freemasonry, anything modern. And yet, we were given that the singularity seems to be that quest for knowledge, that reorganization of thinking, taking into account added facts. So let's at least think that maybe this, we are in a sense, we've created a dilemma that is little more than a very powerful superstition. And it's led to a belief that not in the worship of our elders, but that we today have command of the wisdom of our elders sufficient to be able to judge and determine whether any change is a contradiction to them. I think that is just amazing. We haven't really, I would challenge and suggest, really put ourselves out there for examination. The fundamental Masonic Lodge doesn't embrace philosophical discussion. In fact, it's mocked. The work of the development of character requires an ability to go through life with a sense of empathy and a sense of the importance of living a good life. If the ideas on which that is hinged are trivialized, then or derided or even ignored, I think we are less in a position of being able to reason our way through judgments and our progress, and more satisfied that we are in a state of ignorance and we're quite happy to be there. That being the case, we really don't, we're not in a position of being able to judge very much about the progress or the state of Freemasonry. Our number of acolytes has seemingly, apparently faded lately. I think it's plausible to consider that the contemplation of some of the fundamental ideas that develop character need to be done in a more contemplative frame of mind. And for some of us, that's when we're busy at our work and we're busy going about our business and we have the reminders and the notion to have achieving a goal of self-improvement. And then we're going to set about, perhaps in the way that Confucius, or Kong Fung, as his name in China denotes, suggests that we don't inconvenience other people. And that, you know, the importance, and embrace the importance of not of doing, treating others only as you would care to be treated yourself. That, I think, is remarkable, that we think we can be a 24-hour Mason or a 9-hour Mason. A Mason, very adherent, but only within the time that the lodge doors are open. And tiled, and then the rest of the time doesn't matter. We can go about our business as we would, as if the time out of the lodge is where we demonstrate that character. There is nothing about us that can't be openly discussed in friendly terms, but the anxiety about it is striking, don't you think? If you bring up I can't think why we would want to talk about boring, safe topics. First off, I can't imagine why we would do that. or why we will want to talk about just superficial topics all the time. You know, this is a gavel, this is a compasses, you know. All right, I think for the new Masons and the end of apprentices, it's really important to understand symbolism and particularly the context of symbolism. What are those reminders and what are they telling us? I'm thinking I would like to put the symbols in the context that they deserve. I want a symbol of being thoughtful. I want to see symbols that take me out of myself. And I think perhaps the symbols of geometry, the tools of the Freemason, need a bit of a segue today, because we've distanced ourselves quite a bit from the day of the operative Mason. Nothing more than that. It's not a good or bad. It just is what it is. See, times have changed. So I'm thinking, is it feasible to think about what contemporary civilization expresses in terms of the generation of character and idea? So I would think, if we are at all adherents of the philosophical discussion, philosophy is simply the application of logic or reason. If you think about it, there's no big shutter. It's not a geometry. It is simply applying knowledge. And one would think, and I think that Freemasonry, being predicated on a study of the arts and sciences, is simply giving us some remarkable tools, laying them at our feet, and then moving on. Whether we are bright enough to pick up those tools and apply them is strictly between us and our conscience, a man and his conscience. That's not a failing of the order. The ideas in which the foundation was laid are not going to fade. They've been around for 2,500 years. So anyone that would think that Freemasonry is going to bottom out is really, I think that may be one of the conceits of Freemasonry, that sense of peril, when there isn't peril. There's no peril around us. Do we today, let me put it this way. Could you tell me that you understand a little bit about enough about the work of Socrates, the impact of Socrates? Well, the first would be why. Well, that is completely, the motivation for knowing that is on you. Is it sufficient for you to live in a society that has been developed on the premises and the thinking of a man like that and not know what they are? Well, I'll come back. We'll come back to that. Let's take a little break. Freshen your glass of Kool-Aid or whatever you have in your hand. And maybe this kind of music will give you a little bit of energy. It's Olivia Ong.
Someone who's ready
Cup of espresso or tea, sitting back, opening a good newspaper. Your mind is receptive, you can tell, because you're tuning into a program like this where we sit down and examine some things from different angles. Character development. Put yourself in that stream of people that are aware of the benefits of character development and the rigor that it requires. Here's an example. Teach me to feel another's woe, to hide the fault I see. That mercy I to others show, that mercy show to me. And after all, what is a lie? 'Tis but the truth in a masquerade. To be angry is to revenge the faults of others on ourselves, on ourselves. Some old men continually praise the time of their youth. In fact, you would almost think there were no fools in their days. But unluckily, they themselves are left as an example. These are the words of Alexander Pope. The ruling passion, be it what it will, the ruling passion conquers reason still. What we're doing is difficult. Developing character. The difficulty is being able to connect ideas, to listen to the outcomes, or listen to and study the nature of the logic, and then decide for yourself. If that's the ideal, have I achieved it? Or is it an approximation? A long time ago, I heard something that was very, I thought, just stopped me in my tracks. I've never moved much further than this. It was in the writings of Plato, he's talking about Socrates. You know, that Socrates, there's nothing written by Socrates left. The peripatetic philosopher left an impression and ideas that others have passed on to us. He simply talked about the discovering ignorance. He wasn't alone in that notion. He wasn't alone, no. But discovering ignorance in ourselves, it allows us the freedom of admitting that we don't know very much. And we live in a world of experts. That's the way that I've put it. Everybody's an expert, but you notice they're guessing. Much of what they do is when you hear the experts, you see their anxiety, the forcefulness of their argument, their readiness to be intemperate and to be argumentative, because they're very anxious. What they're standing on is very thin. The foundations of their ideas are very limited. And so they have to recover their ego in this by being forceful. Amazing, isn't it? And you see them, whether they're being inductive reasoning or inductive reasoning makes broad generalizations about specific observations. We see that a lot in our discourse. Even if all the premises are true in a statement, inductive reasoning allows for the conclusion to be false. Truly amazing. So we have to be sensitive to what makes an argument convincing. Yeah, Socrates, he'll be the person through history that we will, cite as the discoverer of ignorance. We're not living in the shadows, waiting for the gods to our sense of obligation to the gods to determine whether we are worthy of good crops and success and good fortune. We've eclipsed. We've moved beyond that. We can now reason through large ideas for ourselves, but we have to practice. We do have to practice. So, do we? And one would think that Freemasonry would be a place where that kind of practice and that kind of development could occur. Too often we're drawn into a straw man argument. It's an informal fallacy, and it's based on giving the impression of refuting an opponent's argument, while actually refuting an argument that was not advanced by the opponent. So, we've never done that before. We probably have. Over 300 years or 400 years of history, are you thinking that there's much that's going on today that hasn't been tried or thought of or done before? Come on now. We can be a little more humble than that. After all, we've been sitting together in our lodges, talking and hanging out and having a good time and a few drinks and shooting the bull and passing on new information, new science and new philosophy, things that were beneficial to the way we are, to our civilization. Yeah. we were and are stabilizing influences. So for anybody to be try to be taken seriously would be saying we've never done that before is, I think, just remarkable. You know, no, I'm not going to necessarily, poor old fella, there's, you know, he's gone off again, he's nodding off, and he just woke up long enough to pass some gas and say, oh, we've never done it like that before. Well, yeah, well, you can't remember. You may not remember, but if you read a little bit of the history, yep, we've done it all before. Even this, you know, we're not, I don't think in terms of calamity, but we're in this phase where gravity is stretching into waves. We're in a period of reflection, not decline. And we're sort of wondering, hey, that was a good ride. We had hundreds of thousands of members around us. It's a great ride. What, you know, are we screwing up? We done something wrong? People like me will talk about how we've become pretty boring and pretty tedious. And that's not the speak about the ritual. My goodness, no. It's the way we're handling it. The way we handle education is that it's an add-on. It's a burden. Our lodges are more like a Presbyterian church than they are a place of higher learning. Symbols, very, very few, and tremendously out of context. So let's say that we can start to put some busts of some of the great minds in the room and start to define you, your order, our order, without saying a word. I mean, what would you use? No, tell me. Don't be shy. I listen to your advice constantly. Tell me what you would use to define the notions. Would you use some symbols of geometry? Well, perhaps. You know, Pythagoras and the master's jewel is a proof. That's a geometric proof that the master wears. And why Pythagoras? Why not Socrates? Why not Aristotle? Well, you might want to, you know, you can now just go up to a keyboard in the library and type in the names of these folks. Why? Type in Socrates, do a little reading, Plato and Aristotle, and look at what they were saying. And then type in Pythagoras and read a little bit about the accomplishments and his school. He was mightily unpopular, but so was Socrates. Hey? The Athenians killed him. Sorry, well, basically, he took his own life. But I mean, you know, he was a singular thinker. And then, 8 years later, they were putting up my goodness, look what we've done. We've missed the value of this great mind, and they were putting up monuments to him. Well, is Hiram a representative? An amalgam, a representative of an amalgamation of great minds. He sacrificed himself knowingly, didn't he? He was subjected to abhorrent behavior by people that were trying to distort an order, to change the natural order. They weren't trying to get something for nothing. That was, but that's like the metaphor of an Agatha Christie movie. This is a little bit more than an Agatha Christie story. They were trying to change the order. And what we, and our brethren, explained that could be. You see, here, the irrational, and what we see is the rational, the reasoned mind addressing the pressure of the superstition. Can superstition change the natural order, natural forces? Well, no. try as we have over the centuries, and a lot of people do, a lot of people with a completely self-absorbed agenda. So they're walking around with a dinosaur on a leash. Dinosaurs are around for 100 million years. We haven't been around for 1 million years. Dinosaurs, well, the vestiges of them are flying around, the birds. The question now is much more serious than it was 300 years ago when the great minds were pulling the brilliance of the ancients, pulling out the brilliance into realizing that the Age of Enlightenment, 17th century, had been done before. This wasn't the first and only, but we call it Enlightenment. And then we look at the period of Renaissance. Well, okay, but those are really a robust challenge to the power of superstition. The superstition that we would turn to tell us about the universe around us. This was the superstition that put the Earth at the center of the universe, and everything around was revolving around the creation. And the disclaimer was that this was God's will. Nothing could be further from truth, could it? Could it? If that being the case, defining us without saying a word, means understanding, empathizing with the thoughts of men coming to a knock on our door for seeking answers. Well, no one of us can begin to explain all there is that would answer that question, not without seeming enormously arrogant or really, really ridiculous. And that's not really, those answers aren't really what the young, our entered apprentices are seeking. No more than the three rascals were doing it, saying, well, let's just ignore the natural order, natural forces, and just give me the answers. You see, Hiram's really laying it out there. It's like a big billboard outside the temple. In order to find the answers, you need to look in certain places, and we can help you identify where to look, but we can't tell you what you'll necessarily find. We'll just tell you where to look. Well, you look in the works of great thinkers that have had a compelling impact on the growth of civilization, on the development of human consciousness. What you find there is what you find there. What you find begins with the question. What questions do you want answered? Don't you find that in itself a remarkably difficult thing to do? What is the essential, if there's that essential question? Oh, I can remember my professors when I'm doing research and they're teaching. The work of your research starts with the question. Take not the elaboration, not the sidebars and all those side issues, but the consolidation of your thinking into the simplest question. And then you set about answering the question. Ah, who am I? When somebody brought that to my attention, that was one of the essential questions I was told. I had no idea what they were talking about. No idea. What do you mean? I'm Dale. I'm the Graham. I'm from there. That family's from there. The roots are over there with the clans. And before that, we know there'd be over in Ireland, the Celts. But who am I? My goodness. And all of a sudden, you begin to ask the question enough, and a context starts to reach out to you. Now, we can find that through the ritual of our orders. We're steeped in ritual. But not, we're never told that the ritual has purpose. Well, let me give you my ideas on that. I believe that ritual helps us to rebalance, that whatever energies we're deploying to understand the nature of philosophy and the development of character, it is important that we all acknowledge the ancients. We acknowledge our history and our roots out of respect. And through that respect, we continue the thinking, the effort, the journey of the ancients, passed from master to entered apprentice. And that process, that beautiful metaphor, will continue. In the day, the stonemasons were doing the work of God. They were building the house of God in the day, the churches and the cathedrals. They had science that was only known to them. They had geometry, natural forces, And they could trust that. The keystone, the physics of a keystone is remarkable. So when you see it, the next time you see it, it might speak to you like it does to a lot of people. How do we know that that arch isn't going to collapse? Well, a lot of them did when we were building. But it works because of natural forces, an understanding of natural forces. Now, I'm not going to hang around with you much longer today. We're going to cool off with a little bit of... So, think about it a bit. If one of the history's most influential teachers was not a teacher at all, but only a kind of midwife, according to him, then there's room for you and me. I have never been the teacher of anyone whatsoever, said Socrates. So the ambiguity of his martyrdom becomes more tantalizing with the centuries. Precisely why was he sentenced to death, and why did he choose death over flight? Could have just taken off. But no. Maybe 5th century Athens had its own politics, you think? Here's a little bit to put in your pocket as you go about your business over the next couple of days. When it is obvious that the goals cannot be reached, don't adjust the goals. Adjust the action steps. Real knowledge is to know the extent of one's ignorance. Our greatest glory is not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall. This is Confucius. He's born in 551 BC. Life is really simple, but we insist on making it complicated. It does not matter how slowly you go, as long as you do not stop. Beautiful. Ah, aude vide tace. Silence is a true friend who never betrays. And I'll leave you with this. This is one of my favorite. By three methods, we may learn wisdom. First, by reflection, which is noblest. Second, by imitation, which is easiest. And third, by experience, which is the bitterest. Yeah. This little John Coltrane equinox, take you away from me. Thank you very much for joining in the conversation and helping answer some of the questions that come to Freemasons. May the great architect of the universe, of course, exact the forces, the natural forces around us and you, and protect you on your journey. And I'll see you soon. Look forward to it. This is John Coltrane. It's called Equinox. See ya. Thank you.